Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this non-stop flight-free podcast service. Our flight time will be roughly 20 minutes. Please make sure your seat backs and tray tables are in their full upright position and that your seat belt is correctly fastened. But no need to set your mobile devices to airplane mode, that can stay off. We've been cleared to take off, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this flight-free podcast.
Hi there, listeners, and thanks for joining us for this month's podcast. We're really excited to be talking to Kate Rawls, an author and adventurer who uses her adventures to be an ambassador for the environment. In 2006, Kate cycled the length of the Rocky Mountains from Texas to Alaska, a journey called the Carbon Cycle, in which she explored North American attitudes towards climate change. Then in 2016, she undertook the Life Cycle, which was an exploration of biodiversity along the Andes mountain range in South America, cycling more than 8,000 miles from Colombia to Cape Horn. We started by asking Kate what her motivations were and why she came up with the idea of what she calls Adventure Plus.
So my name is Kate Rawls, and I've become increasingly interested in the idea of Adventure Plus, or that's what I've been calling it over the years. And it sort of grew out of a real growing alarm about the absolute chasm between what the scientists were telling us on the one hand about climate change and other environmental crises and how important they were, and the chasm between that and any sort of meaningful action on the ground. That was one part of the story. And the other part of the story is that I really love having adventures, and I particularly love riding my bike in mountains. So I was working at a university lecturer at the time, teaching my students about all of this kind of stuff. But I began to wonder whether there was a way of combining these two passions in order to reach wider audiences. And I came up with the idea of Adventure Plus, which is the idea of using adventurous journeys to help raise awareness and inspire action on some of our biggest environmental challenges. So the first Adventure Plus trip I did was called the Carbon Cycle back in 2006. And I cycled from Texas to Alaska, following the spine of the Rockies, and just chatting to people about climate change. This was the idea was to go to the belly of the oil beast and see what solutions were coming out of the heart of the belly of the oil beast. And this was at the height of the Bush administration. So it was a kind of an interesting time to be talking about climate change. And then I took the story back home to the UK, turned that into a slideshow, and then many, many, many years later, a book called The Carbon Cycle. And again, the idea with both was to use the adventure as like a communication hook or a communication medium and go around and talk to all sorts of different audiences about climate change and why it mattered and what we could do about it.
Kate's book, The Carbon Cycle, is a great read and highly recommended, though currently out of print. So if you'd like a copy, you can contact Kate via her website, which is outdoorphilosophy.co.uk. But though this journey was all about climate change, that's only part of the picture in terms of the environmental challenges we face. Kate explains.
10 years later, I was still giving the Carbon Cycle slideshow, and it really dawned on me that I was onto something here. Something about this combination of adventure and big environmental issues was working. And I was also noticing that the climate change agenda was getting a lot more attention, which is great, but it was starting to eclipse other environmental issues, and particularly biodiversity loss. So we are wiping out species at about 1,000 times faster than the so-called background rate of extinction. The United Nations said recently that about 1 million species are now heading inexorably for extinction. And if we look at populations of wild animals, we've lost over 60% of our populations of wild animals in less than my lifetime. And so what scientists are saying is that actually biodiversity loss and this sort of ecosystem crisis that that's associated with is every bit as challenging to us and to other species too, obviously, as climate change. But in my view, it's getting much, much less attention and much less press, even though the two issues, climate change and biodiversity loss, are deeply intertwined. Paul Ehrlich, I think, many, many, many years ago, came up with a really neat equation, which was environmental impact equals population times consumption times technology. And basically, it's saying that, you know, our impacts on the planet are because of how many of us there are and what we understand by quality of life, which at the minute is very, very highly consumer-focused, consumeristic, materialistic. So the more of us consuming more and more stuff, the more impact we have on the planet. And the impacts that we're seeing are kind of a side effect of our growth-based economics and our growth-based approach to life in general. And those impacts are, of course, climate change, biodiversity loss, the shocking increase in plastic pollution, the shocking increase in other kinds of pollution, etc., etc., etc. So they all have a shared common root, absolutely, and they're all very interconnected. So if you lose trees, you're losing biodiversity, and trees are, of course, a carbon sink. There's a real danger currently that a lot of the language around environmental crisis is the language of climate change. And I am absolutely not for a second denying the importance of climate change and the climate change emergency. But if we only talk about the climate change emergency and don't link that to the ecological and biodiversity emergency, then I think that becomes really dangerous. And for example, you then run the risk of so-called solutions to climate change that can really badly backfire in terms of biodiversity. An obvious example would be trying to use biofuel instead of diesel fuel to power transport. But then what's happening is that you're taking down really diverse, lush, important forest ecosystems to grow monocultures of palm or whatever is being used to turn into biofuel, and then you've got a biodiversity catastrophe on your hands. So we have to talk about climate change and the ecological emergency. I think that's a really important point, and recognise that this is part of a whole systemic set of issues.
We're really pleased that Kate is one of the people to have signed our pledge not to fly in 2020. But we're quite careful not to say you can never fly again. Taking a year off is about starting the conversation and changing the mindset away from jumping on a flight without thinking. The way Kate has done it is allowed herself one flight every 3 years, and she explains how she came to that decision.
So when I did the carbon cycle journey, I flew across the Atlantic, and at the time I justified it. I sort of justified it by saying, well, I'm going for 3 months. When I'm there, I'm only going to ride my bicycle, and I'm doing it for climate change reasons. And I was a bit shocked when I finally figured out, embarrassingly, some months later, oh, heck, that is exactly part of the problem. That mindset is the problem. I was sort of saying, well, my flight is special. My flight is justified. And so after that, I decided I wasn't prepared to quit flying completely, but I would put myself on a flying ration. And so since 2006, I have flown no more than once every 3 years. And interestingly, when I'm talking about climate change and my approach to climate change, I find people really pay attention to that idea. You can sort of feel in the audience that people are saying, oh, that's interesting, because I think many people aren't prepared to quit flying for all sorts of reasons, family reasons or work reasons, but they could contemplate flying less. So I'm on one flight every 3 years, and I always invite audiences to think about, well, could you also go on a self-imposed flying ration, and even if you can't at this point, consider giving it up.
So bearing in mind that ration, we asked Kate how she crossed the ocean for her second transatlantic cycling adventure.
So when I went across the Atlantic for the life cycle journey, it wasn't a flying year in my once per 3 year flying ration world. And I also really was keen to do this journey with as minimum environmental impact as possible, because one of the things that has been really troubling me is looking at the sort of adventure and outdoor world, if you like, and how there's often just a complete sort of blanking out of the problems around flying. Like, we are still seeing the adventure world, people going off and climbing a mountain on every continent and flying in between, and, you know, trips of that kind. And we're not really yet in the adventure community, I don't think, having an open and honest conversation about the impacts of that and the problems associated with flying and other impacts of of travel. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing it, but I am saying we really, really need that conversation to be had. I mean, most adventurers are in love with the planet. You know, we love going to these places and we're also having a big impact on them. So let's open up that conversation and see what we can do that's positive there. Because I think on the whole, adventure is a hugely positive thing with very different values that the rest of the world could benefit from. So I wanted to keep my own impact down as low as possible. But I also really wanted to go to South America because of my focus on biodiversity and because I love cycling in mountains. And where can you get both of those things in spades? Well, obviously, it's South America. And I looked into it and decided the best way I could get across the Atlantic was on a cargo ship. And so Mike Berners-Lee, who's a climate footprint specialist, kindly did the number crunching for me. And he figured out that if I had crossed the Atlantic for this journey on a plane, the carbon footprint would have been roughly 2 tons of CO2 and equivalent emissions, assuming a second class flight. A lot more if it was a first class flight, but that was never on the cards anyway. So 2 tons, and then the per passenger mile, the cargo ship brings that down to 50 kilograms. So that was a huge, huge saving. And it was a fascinating way to travel as well. It took me 11 days went to France and then from France across to Colombia. And then a month on the way back, coming up the west coast of South America and then through the Panama Canal and then across the Atlantic, which was really, really interesting and a fantastic way to travel because it gives you time to change gear, both on the way to the journey and even more importantly, on the way back. You need time and it's not the cheapest way to travel either, but I utterly recommend it if people listening have the opportunity to do so.
And this is exactly what we've heard from other cargo ship travellers, such as Christine and Peter, who wrote for our blog about their journey back from Singapore by cargo ship. They put it really nicely. Had we flown, our bodies would have arrived home before our brains. So it's not just about the environmental benefit. It can also be very worthwhile for us as travellers, like learning how the world connects and giving you an experience you will never forget, something truly unique, unlike a flight. We asked Kate, did she have any wow moments?
There are many wow moments from the cargo ship crossing. I mean, on the way out, I was going from east to west. And one of the things that was fantastic about that was just, you know, every day you get an extra hour of sleep, which is wonderful. And it gets warmer. I left in November. So I left France. It was absolutely freezing. And then every day it gets a little bit warmer and eventually it gets very, very warm. And I would be on deck a lot and watching the flying fish. And so that, yeah, it was just fantastic. I mean, and the other thing that which is incredibly impactful is just realizing the size of the ocean. I mean, we all know that 7/10 of our planet is covered in ocean, and really planet Earth should be called planet ocean because it is mostly ocean. But when you're on it and you are traveling for days and days and days without seeing land, that really, really hits home what that means.
Now, one big problem we haven't really mentioned here is that cargo ships aren't necessarily green. It's a hugely polluting industry. So what does Kate think about that?
I think one thing about the cargo ship is that it is a bit of a paradox. I mean, per passenger mile, it's a drastic reduction in, you know, a passenger's carbon footprint across the Atlantic. But the cargo industry actually has a bigger footprint than aviation because there are so many ships out there running on such bad fuel as fast as possible. And in that way, it was a real eye-opener as well, because visually it's really, really striking. When you come into a port and you can just see acres and acres and acres of these containers, and they're constantly in motion. They're going off ships and on ships and off ships and onto trucks and then off somewhere else. And you really realise very, very vividly how crazy the current system is. I mean, how much stuff is constantly in motion around the world, most of which we don't actually need, but it's fundamental to our growth-based capitalist economic system that it keeps going. And it is insane. So it was very striking from that point of view, given, you know, the focus of my journey, to start out with that kind of visual reminder of the craziness of the current system that we're all part of.
Okay, so onto the actual concept of travel. hitching a lift on a cargo ship is not going to suit everybody. Cabin availability is low, it's quite expensive, and obviously for holiday purposes it would just take up too much time. The vast majority of people crossing the Atlantic do so by plane. So, do we need to completely reconsider travel? The Americas are a long way away across a huge ocean. What does this mean for those of us who want to go there?
I think we have to put the whole travelling, and particularly holiday travelling thing, firmly into context and perspective, don't we? I mean, we're talking about a major climate change and ecological emergency. We're talking about a serious threat to human civilization as we currently understand it, and a serious threat to many, many, many other forms of life on Earth who are every bit as entitled to be here as we are, and who we utterly depend on. I mean, this is the key thing about biodiversity. It's not a luxury or nice to have. It's our life support system. I mean, if we think about the fact that we are all solar powered, for example, we think of solar power and we think of panels on roofs, but we are solar powered, as in, you know, we depend on the sun's energy for food, but we can't access the energy as food without the help of plants and other living beings who have chlorophyll that can turn sun's energy into carbohydrates. Everything else, including us, either eats plants or things that eat plants. And that's where we get our energy. And plants depend on pollinators and the things that make the soil fertile and allow plants to grow. So biodiversity is not a luxury, as I said, it's our life support system. It's absolutely critical. We cannot live without it. And yet we're currently decimating it. And we all know the stats around climate change and what the climate change projections are currently looking like. So we're talking about major environmental crises here. And that's the context in which I think we have to put our travelling and our holiday plans. So, yeah, most people are not going to be able to cross the Atlantic on a cargo ship. I will never be able to do that again in my lifetime. I very much doubt. It was a once in a lifetime thing. I have many friends on the other side of the Atlantic. I was a student in Colorado a long time ago, and I'm just not going to be able to see them regularly. And I think that's how it is, isn't it? We are going to have to cut back on our travelling, and we're going to have to find ways of turning that into a positive by celebrating where we do live and going on holiday more locally, going on train rides, going on bike rides. You know, that there are ways to make the most of it. When I cut back on my flying, I spent a lot more time sea kayaking in Scotland, and it was fantastic. It's, you know, Scotland is a hard place to beat if you happen to be into sea kayaking. So, yeah, there's no easy way around it, really, is there? Like, we can't just jump on a flight and go to New York for our hen nights and stag do's any longer. That just isn't the world that we live in anymore. And it's tragic. I feel cheated in a way, because just as the cheap flight world was beginning to open up travel possibilities for people like me who love travel, I was also learning about climate change and realizing that I just couldn't justify that kind of flying behavior. So that's how it is. It's about perspective, isn't it? And, you know, my holiday plans and my holiday desires can't possibly any longer take priority over the future of life on Earth. I mean, they just can't.
But people are reluctant to hear this. We want to protect our lifestyles and have our holidays in the Caribbean. We forget how relatively recent it is that we live in this globalised society. Now it's so easy to travel long distances relatively cheaply, we forget what that means, not just in terms of emissions, but in terms of relationships and the practicalities of making our planet so artificially small. Isn't this just too hard a sell?
It is a hard sell, but I think... I think it's absolutely fundamentally important to be honest about what we're up against and honest about the scale of the challenge now. And, you know, we're talking at the need to reduce emissions by 80% really quickly. So we have to make cuts, and that's all there is to it. But I think what's also fundamentally important is that we need fairness in the process. You know, this has to be a just transition from the fossil fuel based energy system that we have now and fossil fuel based economy to a very different economy and very different energy system. And that transition has to be a just one. It has to be a fair one. And that includes access to travel. So there's a myth that cheap flights have been accessed by people with less money. And actually, when you look at the figures, as I'm sure you know, most people in the UK still don't fly. Flying is still, you know, a huge privilege.
So what does a life with less flying look like? Kate's keen to communicate that it can be win-win all round.
One of the things you really learn cycle touring is if you appreciate the basics and you really get joy from a hot shower and a cup of coffee and a decent meal and you don't need a lot more, that's the secret to happiness and to sustainability. And there are so many win-wins. You know, so much of modern life is stressful and we have too much stuff and we're too busy and we have money we haven't got time to spend, and it's, you know, there's a lot of stress and unhappiness in modern life. There are actually ways in which we could all have a higher quality of life, albeit differently understood, much more about time with each other, with our friends, with our communities, with nature, and having positive experiences than quantities of stuff. But we could have a better quality of life for all of us, more equitably enjoyed, with a much, 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 much lower carbon and other environmental footprint. And what's not to like about that? You know, the current model is failing. It's a disaster socially as well as a disaster environmentally. And we need to get smart and move beyond it. And we can do that. It's very clear that the solutions are out there. We know how to reconstruct the transport system, the food system, the energy system to make it clean and more equitable and less impactful. We just need to crack on and do it.
Now to the final question about this future vision of transatlantic travel. As we've said, on a per passenger basis, cargo ship is far lower in emissions, but it's not a solution because it's part of a highly polluting industry and it's expensive and it's not going to be for everybody. But what if we were to have this idea of flotillas of white-sailed ships coming into harbour in New York, having set sail from Southampton? Is that an option? Some people think so. Is that what will happen in the future when we've all woken up and realised what we need to do? Is this the way we will now be travelling across the Atlantic?
I would love to think that was the future. I mean, wouldn't that be wonderful? Sailing ships are amazing. They're almost as amazing as bicycles, I think, as a low energy form of transport. The bicycle is supposed to be the most efficient way of moving a human being from A to B. I once read 10 miles per peanut on a flat road without a headwind, if there is such a thing. But a sailing ship must come a close second. I mean, to move people around the world using the power of the wind is a fantastic vision, isn't it? And not just a vision, it's a fantastic reality. And yeah, good luck to those entrepreneurs that are thinking about trying to upscale the current provision, because it's definitely possible to have passenger sailing craft. And it's not that long ago that sailing ships were humans' main way of travelling around the world. You know, we forget how recent our industrialised history is, I think, sometimes in the context of the wider history of humanity on the planet. So yeah, I could definitely see an increase in sailing. I mean, it's possibly never going to be the equivalent of the jumbo jet, you know, bus in the sky kind of thing, because it is always going to take longer, and it's always going to be more limited in terms of availability, I would think. But that's also going to be part of a bigger social change, isn't it? We are going to have to probably travel less in the future and enjoy where we are more and spend more time exploring close to home. And certainly my next journeys are all going to be in the UK and Europe, and I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Thank you so much to Kate for speaking to us. We hope you are as inspired by Kate's adventures as we are. Please do look her up online at outdoorphilosophy.co.uk. And see if you can get your hands on one of her books or even catch one of her excellent talks. Thanks again to Kate. Thanks to you for listening. And join us again next month when we'll be talking about the green alternatives to flying and the potential of carbon offsetting. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the seatbelt sign indicates we're coming to the end of our journey. Don't forget to take your duty-free items with you. We have some excellent tweets and inspiring Instagram posts at FlightFree2020. Or how about our Facebook page, Flight Free UK? And our website is always available, www.flightfree.co.uk. We've been clear to land, so on behalf of the Flight Free Podcast Service, I'd like to thank you for joining us, and we look forward to welcoming you on board again next month.